Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes. This week on Footnotes, we have Molly Patterson.
Hello.
Rob Croyle.
Beautiful day in the neighborhood.
And your favorite host, Logan Daly.
Hello, Logan.
I'm just hamming it up today. I don't know why. Sounds fun. We need to get Josh in here. We'll just do a crazy session one time.
Man. Yeah. He's probably still asleep, but...
No, he's currently... This is going to be super creepy, but he's currently getting ready to go see Godzilla with Jake. They're going to go see Godzilla at noon.
At noon. Nice.
Godzilla, King of the Monsters, which I previously have seen. It was an enjoyable flick. There was large monsters, of which Godzilla was the king.
Of course he is.
Says so in the title. There was a lot of loud noises. I saw it in IMAX.
Oh.
That takes me back to my youth, like maybe few other movies has.
Did you grow up watching Godzilla movies?
Oh, yeah.
I grew up watching them, like the old black and whites where they were recorded in Japanese and then overdubbed in English, so people's mouths are moving like, "East Godzilla!" Mouth moving. You're like, so good. So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this new one, the one actor, and he's in Inception. He's also in that one. He's the guy that gets trapped in there. He's like, "An old man filled with regret." I do that voice terribly. But the way he said Godzilla, for half of the movie, I thought he was saying Coachella. And I'm curious to see what Josh has to say about that.
Yes, he'll say something.
So anyway, you can ask Josh how the movie was on Sunday. If you're hearing this before Sunday, ask him what his thoughts on Godzilla were. There you go. So that's been the intro to Footnotes now.
Well,
all right.
Welcome to Footnotes.
So this week we had Rob preaching, and the only shortcoming that I can think of was that it wasn't short.
No.
10 minutes over on time, but really, like, I can't say I expected less because we were taking a huge chunk of the story.
There's so much in there.
There's a lot to talk about. Like,
Yeah.
If any of these come in remotely close to on time, it's going to be a miracle or Brandon's preaching them.
Love you, Brandon.
As short as Brandon's was, mine was long. Mm-hmm. By that amount.
It's true. You made up for his 10 minutes.
There you go.
Yeah.
You guys shared you so nicely.
Aww, that's community.
It was my birthday. I deserved a gift.
Oh, man. I'm just glad you didn't preach your age.
Yeah, that's a lot longer. People would be falling out windows, and we'd have to pray for them and resurrect them.
40 was the number of the day, so you went for 40 minutes, and we did Psalm 40 for the call to worship, and there was at least two other times during the day where 40 popped up in things I was doing. So
nice.
It was one of those weird, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
So it felt like the desert, is what you're saying to me.
It was, yes.
God is doing a good work.
Oh, that's funny.
There was a testing.
It was a honeymoon period. It was fine.
Go and find the meaning of this.
All right. So we did you have any other shortcomings? We had the odd microphone buzzing placement. It was moving on you a little bit. But yeah. Really, that wasn't that terrible live, for sure. And even on the recording, it wasn't that bad.
Apparently, I breathe heavier or louder than most.
Yeah, you and Marty, loud breathers. You breathe with purpose.
Breathe with purpose. That's, yeah.
Breathe with purpose.
Don't
we're going to go with
all
that.
Breathe with purpose.
I like it
they
when
breathe
I laugh
with more purpose.
Ah, okay.
I like it when I laugh at my own jokes and you can't tell that the people are laughing.
Oh, yeah. Because we don't have a room mic set up. And that is kind of enjoyable.
It's like, oh, that was awkward as I listened to myself.
I didn't think that.
Good stuff. All right. Well, we want to start off by talking about Ananias and Sapphira.
Yeah, we talked about how the kingdom was opposed and the different forms that, came about for the first church, as we see in the first eight chapters of the book of Acts. And one of the stories that we did not cover, because I will have preached my age plus, was the fate of Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5, which is opposition within.
Sure. Because they're in the church.
They're in the church. They're part of the church.
Part of the fold.
Part of the fold. I did find it interesting at the very end of chapter 4, this is a footnote to a footnote, but Barnabas is mentioned for the first time, and it's because he is one of the people that sells property and brings money to the apostles, and that's the first mention of Barnabas. And then I don't know how many chapters later Barnabas shows up again.
Yeah.
I believe it's with Paul.
I think you're correct there.
And so Luke thought that significant. That
just throw a little blip in there.
Yeah, that was a faith moment for Barnabas, and maybe the first one where people were like, "Oh, who is this guy?" And so we don't know much of what happens between those, you know, the intermittent time there. But I think we've all had those moments where we see someone show up on the scene for the first time, maybe like Cassie showing up, you know, and here's this new gal. She's playing keys for us. And, you know, she volunteers the first day that she shows up for a church service. And, you know, she was there for setup before anybody else was, even us.
Yeah, she beat us there that day. Oh, so wow. Props to Cassie.
Nice.
Yeah. We were 8:05 and she was there by 8 at least.
Wow.
So well done.
Go get her.
So, yeah, I mean, there's those moments where people show up for the first time for you as a person or as a community. And then their story continues. I think about the Ehlers coming back this week.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, that's a really good comparison to this. Like, they showed up last summer. They were here around a little bit.
Yep.
Could compare this to Barnabas selling some property.
Yep.
They get mentioned, and then the story continues, and we're like, where were they at? Well, we all know they were back down in California because, you know, we're friends on Facebook, and we're following the story there. But they're going to be getting back here and jumping back into it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. No, and maybe something that could be said of the Barnabas thing there is he's mentioned, and I think that, to me at least, that speaks that we don't always get to see the entire story. We don't get to know the entire story of somebody.
Right.
And you never know where your story is going to intersect with theirs and how that's going to affect things. Because Barnabas played a huge role later down the road. Did they know at the time that he was going to do that? No.
Nope.
Not necessarily.
Nope.
We're not told that. So that might be something you could pull out of. It's a good little point.
Yeah, I love seeing people's faith story kind of unfold and be, you know, to be a witness to that, someone, God working in someone's life in a brand new way, and they respond, and you know, further down the road you see, you know, just how that kind of comes to fullness. So, but back to Ananias and Sapphira. So I'll just read this out of chapter 5, but a man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property and kept back some of the price for himself with his wife's full knowledge, and bringing a portion of it, he laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back some of the price of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not under your control? Why is it that you have conceived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. And as he heard these words, Ananias fell down and breathed his last, and a great fear came over all who heard of it. So Ananias comes in and says, this is how much the property that we just sold for, lays it at the apostles' feet, tells a lie, and Sapphira comes in 3 hours later, And she's asked, you know, is this how much the property is sold for? And she said, yes.
For that price.
Yep, that's the price. And so, and she dies before them. And she gets carried off. And the whole church community takes note of this. And so I didn't have a chance to talk about this in the sermon, but we do it from time to time face opposition within the body of Christ where people don't handle their responsibilities well.
Mm-hmm.
And the church has to confront, has to deal with this issue or not, which is worse than facing it. But one of the things I thought interesting about the story is it just seems to me to connect a little bit to the Pentecost story and what Marty brought out when he talked about Pentecost and Mount Sinai and how at Mount Sinai Moses took revenge or tried to deal with the issue for God, and mm-hmm. yet God was more than willing to deal with the issue himself. And in the Pentecost story, Peter could have probably called people to arms if he wanted to, I guess.
Sure.
And repeat Moses' mistake.
Look, God didn't give him a ton of time to do that.
Well, he calls them to repentance. But are you talking about in this Acts 5 story?
Yeah, in this story with Ananias, like, so Peter said these, you know, Peter calls him out and asks him why,
right?
And then when Ananias hears those words, he drops dead.
Wow, yeah,
like, so I mean, Peter could have just been like, "You did this," and then like gone all Rambo on him, I guess. But I mean, as Peter was wont to do, actually, that's a good point.
It's true.
Like, this is the same Peter that hacked off that one guard's ear.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe Peter's learned his lesson at this point. Let God take care of the judgment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is pretty quick here.
And it just reminds me that as a church community, like, we need to deal with problems within the church, but definitely there's a way that God wants us to deal with that. And I think, you know, having grace, having a mixture of grace, but also truth and honesty and...
Oh, sure. He's seeking the truth here. And you can't, at least I would say, I don't think you can have grace without truth.
Right.
Real grace.
Right.
You have to... That only lives in the light. And if you're not going to live out that truth and seek that, then I don't think you really have grace, or it devalues the grace.
I also think in terms of when problems happen within churches, which that's going to happen because there's people there, how the church responds, I think that to me, that's always spoke a ton. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in Post Falls and there were problems with a staff member and, you know, a significant life choice or decision, and the way Pastor Jim would address the congregation and talk through it, it ministered to me. Like, I knew the church was not, they weren't hiding things. Mm-hmm. They're being open and honest. They took it seriously, but then also asked us to not gossip about the situation, trust that the church is actually going to deal with this appropriately. So, you know, that meant something to me, and it's meant something to other people that I, you know, like, I know Michael Reyes has talked about this, a friend of ours, pastor, on staff now at the Coeur d'Alene campus, but at the time was just one of the parishioners, one of the guys sitting in the pews, and that's why he stuck with the church. But Molly, you saw another connection in this story.
Well, there's two connections. One of them was, I did not write it down, but Moses and they tried to keep stuff in the Exodus and the ground opened up. But another one I found was, it's so hard to read this around the mic. So the Israelites were going in and they were, this is during Joshua's time, and they had just defeated Ai and the town of Ai. And so they were told not to take anything from the spoils and they were just told to leave it. And they ended up, there was a plague that went through. And so the Israelites were trying to figure out why God was punishing them. So then they had each tribe go by and then each family go by and they ended up getting to Aknan. And Joshua asked him, my son, I implore you, give glory to the Lord and the God of Israel and give praise to him and tell now what you have done. Do not hide it from me. So Aknan answered Joshua and said, God, truly I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel, and this is what I did. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shamar and 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold, 50 shekels in weight, and I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are concealed in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath it. And so Joshua took messengers and they went and looked and found it. And then, I mean, they took matters into their own hands and stoned Aknan and his family. But I think God would have acted if they had. I mean, obviously he did with the plague. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. Both stories relate to money.
Mm-hmm.
And just what that holds in our hearts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and with Ananias, like, he wanted the status of being generous.
Mm.
But
saying, yeah, this is everything.
This is everything.
I'm giving everything.
But I still want to be, like, status in the world, too.
Mm. I'm going to keep the security of holding this bit back. But I'm going to take credit.
For both, yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if he hadn't, if he would have been like, yeah, no. This is what it sold for, but this is what I'm giving.
Which is interesting because when you say that, I think in terms of Barnabas, he comes and lays at the feet, and it's almost the way the story is told in comparison is just unassuming. Like he doesn't want the status. He lays it at the feet and he goes. And so, you know, maybe that position, that humility is a driving factor.
Yeah.
Is one of the driving factors, but then also comfort or security.
Sure. Well, and I think there's a lesson to be had in there about how we approach generosity. Like why are you being generous?
Mm.
Why are you picking up the tab?
Yeah.
You know, are you generous when no one's watching?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you generous when somebody else is going to get the credit for what you just did? Or are you just doing it to make a name for yourself? You know, and I think that's an important thing to distinguish between. And there's nothing wrong with like being acknowledged if you give something or, you know, you look at people that give giant donations or build a trust and it's in their name or something. Like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
Unless that's the driving factor.
Unless that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
like I wouldn't give this, I wouldn't be generous unless my name's on the building.
Yeah. Or unless I get to pull the sure. strings.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless I'm going to somehow have control over something.
Like, I'm going to be the puppet master.
Yeah. Now I'm buying power. I'm not being generous.
Well, Jesus spoke about how you can't serve two masters, and Ananias was basically trying to serve two.
Yeah.
He was trying to buy his privilege or esteem in the church, but then also continue to hold that esteem in the public.
Well, and I was wondering as we were talking through this, is this a discipleship issue? But I don't think it is because God responds quickly to this, and so like this is a submission issue. This I have to believe that Ananias and Sapphira had been discipled, but were just choosing to disobey, which is different than someone who doesn't know.
Genuinely know, yeah.
Like, they're ignorant of God's ways, and we hold a higher level for leadership, or we should. I do. The military taught me to do that. I'm not sure why we'd handle it any different within the church.
Yeah.
And so if there's a leader that is, or someone who's long in the tooth, as it were, for the faith, that becomes a different conversation than someone who's just brand new and, like, what does tithing even mean, or what does generosity even mean, or, those kinds of things. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this is the first time that Ananias and Sapphira show up. Like, we don't know anything else about them. So this could have been a pattern of their whole life. And they just, like, God is like, nope, done. Like, we're not going to continue this pattern.
Could have been. Might not have been.
It could be true.
The first time. Could have. That's the part that I struggle with sometimes in some of these stories, is because I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it can become, I don't know, it's easy to get to read into it, maybe what I want to read into it.
Yep. Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think that can be good sometimes, and that can also be not good.
Yeah.
But it's something to be aware of as you're reading these stories, as you're digging into them, as you're processing them, is to be aware of your own biases and where, does it say it in the text?
Yeah.
Versus is this drosh? Are we reading into it and, creating connections that might not be there? Midrash, are we adding to the story, which doesn't always be, that's not a bad thing, but if at any point that takes away from the actual story, better reevaluate. So,
yep.
Just important thing to keep in mind there.
Yeah. I do like that after the story, they talk about how the number was added to the church. That, like, even though the whole church was filled with fear over this, they were still being added to. So it didn't stop it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think when the church, Big C church, I've seen where churches have wanted to protect its reputation, and wanting to protect its reputation, I think they've given something up because God's not, like, you look at the scriptures, God is perfectly content with calling things out exactly as they are. And so
there would be half the stories in here if God was, like, super concerned with reputation.
Yeah. God's reputation is unblemished because he is who he is, mm-hmm. and he always acts the same. We are the ones that don't always act, in accordance with our own beliefs and doctrines and ideas and ideals. And so, it is challenging when something happens that, is contrary, it is challenging as a church, as a leadership, to know how to handle, sin concerns, I guess, within a leader. Like, how do you deal with that well? If a youth pastor runs off with his aide, leaves his wife and runs off with his aide, how do you handle that conversation well with a congregation of 5,000? But I watched Jim Putman handle that conversation well.
Yeah.
And I think it takes humility. It takes prayer. It takes a leadership team that's willing to look at those things and answer them honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unflinchingly.
Yeah.
I'd
can we flinch a little? Still go, but flinch.
Jeez.
Still do what's right, but I'm going to be flinching.
Just a little flinching? All yeah. right. I guess.
Those are hard leadership moments, but they're the ones that I think for a community, they define you one way or another, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
People are watching.
Yep.
Well, and if you handle that properly, it protects God's reputation. Mm-hmm. If you don't handle it properly, you're detrimental to God's reputation among men.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very true.
I don't think God's actions ever damage his reputation. If you look at any of these stories, anytime his reputation is damaged, usually tracks back to man handling something improperly.
Yeah.
So, something to chew on. Delicious.
Mm.
Let's talk some Beatitudes.
The Beatitudes.
Or C-attitudes. Maybe some D-attitudes.
Something.
I don't know. Did we forget the A-attitudes?
We might have. So I brought the Beatitudes into the conversation for the sermon. Jesus in verse 10 says, "Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad." I'm not sure if I've ever lived that one out really well, but I want to. "For your reward in heaven is great, for in the same way they persecute the prophets who were before you." Boy, that comparison, man, to be compared to a prophet, if you are persecuted for
sure.
righteousness' sake or for following Jesus. So I had a couple thoughts when I was
Real
looking
quick,
at this.
That was out of Matthew, right?
That's out of Matthew 5.
Okay.
So
verse 10 is where you started.
Yeah, verse 10. Okay. Couple thoughts. One, I got to thinking about the very first blessing we see in the Bible, which is in Genesis 1, and it's the Jews see this both as a blessing and a command to be fruitful and go and multiply. Mm-hmm. And Jesus in the Beatitudes, in the Sermon on the Mount, his first sermon, or maybe his great sermon to his disciples, he gives his version of blessing. And I was thinking, you know, first of all, in verse 10, 11, with these, blessed are you when you've been persecuted. This seems upside down and backwards. Like you're blessed because you're persecuted like that.
This does not feel like a blessing.
It doesn't feel like a blessing. But maybe this is how the church is going to be fruitful and multiply.
Mm.
Maybe this is what causes the church to actually grow. And when we're not being blessed, or when we're not blessed through persecution, maybe that's why when we run from persecution, when we avoid those hard conversations, maybe that's why the church's growth is stunted.
Stagnant.
I know that every time I've shared my faith, it's felt kind of awkward. I mean, there was some kind of resistance to it every time, but the times that I was willing to engage in that, I saw God do something cool. And their life was changed. Now, in some cases, the results happened 6 months or a year later. In other cases, it was 15 years later. But I started looking at verses 10, 11, then I had to back up to verse 3 because he starts off the Beatitudes with, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And I found it interesting, like there's seven beatitudes, seven blessings. And then there's two. And if for Peter and John, like I imagine they were counting as Jesus was sharing these. And when they got to number seven, I bet they were thinking, all right, so the list is complete. The list is complete, but then Jesus continues with the two, which is, blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, and blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you for falsely saying all kinds of evil against you because of me. And so I was wrestling with, like, what is Jesus saying here and what is he doing here? Mm. And the theory I came up with could be right, could be wrong, could be none of the above, but is that the seven is a list in its own, and the two is a list within itself. But the seven tell you how to do the two. Like, how do you deal with persecution? Be humble. Be willing to mourn. Be gentle. Hunger, thirst for righteousness. Be pure in heart. Be a peacemaker. These are the things that help you face the persecution. These are the things that help you be salt and light in the way that God wants us to be salt and light. And if we are being persecuted, but we respond with anything other than gentleness or mercy or being a peacemaker, then maybe we're not handling that persecution or what we perceive as persecution or opposition. Maybe we're not handling that the way Jesus would ask us to.
Yeah. I see on the flip side of, like, I mean, it's easy to be poor in spirit and mourn when things are easy. Like, you can pretend all of that, but it's when you're actually persecuted and you're up against, like, a hard spot where these actually are shown. So, like, I see the flip side of you, like, it's easy to fake all of this if things aren't actually challenging.
Right.
But when things are actually challenging, that's when your true character is shown.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I remember there was a time in my life where if someone asked me, how's your week? I'd always have a problem to share. Oh, I got this problem. I got this problem. I got, you know, and I thought that my value was somehow found in solving problems. So I had to have a problem to solve.
Sure.
And I got to, I don't remember why I started looking at them going, I have a pretty good life and those really aren't problems. And maybe I just need to change my perspective here. Maybe my life isn't so bad.
I tend to have the opposite. Where people ask me how I'm doing, I'm like, I'm all right.
I'm all right.
I'm all right. Because I just don't want to get into it with people sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I try to be real. But hopeful. I'm going to be balanced there.
Sure.
Now, I don't need to be real with everybody at to the same degree, but I blessed are those who mourn. Like, these are people that are choosing to feel it, to live in it and not numb out or escape or avoid. But what I think I hear you saying is when the 50th person asks you the question, you just want to kind of hold up a, like, I want to hold up a sign and say, here's my story. And I wonder if how many of those folks really actually want to hear my story anyway.
Mm.
Like, you're asking, but do you really want the answer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think people do.
whether they know it or not. Like, but they don't necessarily, like, if you ask them that, like, do you really want to know? You're going to catch them off guard.
Yeah.
You know, especially if things are not all peachy.
Yeah.
But I think in general, most people genuinely want to care whether they know they do or not.
Yeah.
But that does not make, you know, I, you know, the, oh, no, doing all right. Living the dream. That's my go-to. Living the dream.
'Cause you are.
Yeah. I did not specify what type of dream.
I sometimes like to ask you, is this a nightmare or a good dream?
Is this a night terror? Yikes.
Yes.
No, but that's, but I think that people genuinely, we're especially, I mean, today, in today's day and age, we are starved for connection. And so if you are willing to engage people on a real level, they're drawn to that. They will suck it up like a plant in the desert.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, but be prepared, because that means that they're going to want more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do with that what you will.
Yeah.
I noticed something here as we're looking at these Beatitudes, in verse 6, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness are blessed, for they will be filled. And then we jump down to 10, those who are persecuted for righteousness are blessed. So you're blessed if you're hungering for righteousness, but then you're going to be persecuted for that righteousness that you hunger for. And then I also, I think that they're probably, and depending on what translation you have, maybe this will help clarify it. But you've got the other one that you pointed out. So you've got these two at the end, the persecuted for righteousness, and then blessed when they insult and persecute you and falsely say every kind of evil against you because of me. So you've got, this is they're bringing false accusations. I see possibly a tie-in with verse 8, the pure in heart are blessed. Because if you're somebody who is, and I don't know, what does yours have for pure in heart, verse 8?
Pure in heart.
Pure in heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm reading that, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I'm reading that as if you're pure of heart, you're seeking truthfulness, you're...
Right.
All of these, none of these right. are concealing. All of these are vulnerable and truth and honesty.
Mm.
And you're seeking truthfulness here. And if...
Doesn't mean you're perfect. It means you are honest and real about...
Yeah, but you're not hiding anything. You're being honest in this, and truthfulness. If you're, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like this, but if you drop a bunch of truth bombs on people that are living in proverbial darkness, that don't want, like, truth draws out that venom. Like
right.
lies and darkness and hiding and concealment and all of that
right.
does not exist when you start dropping truthfulness. And I can only think like that. I think there's a connection here between 8 and 11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you've got, like, if you're pure in heart, if you're merciful, if you're showing all of these, it's going to bring down the opposition on you. But it on the flip side, it is also how you combat the opposition. And that's why the opposition comes out at you, because it does not like any of these.
Right. Right.
So if you're going to live out these Beatitudes, if you're going to be poor in spirit, if you're going to be vulnerable enough to mourn, if you're going to be pure at heart, like, it's gonna bring the opposition. And then the question becomes, are you going to cave and sacrifice being pure of heart or a peacemaker or merciful or hungering and thirsting for righteousness Are you going to continue to be gentle when that opposition comes out because it does not want you to be?
Right, right.
And that's the choice that you're left with. And I just think that that is a hard question to really wrestle with.
And I think what we see in the book of Acts is that the church figured out together how to do this.
Sure.
They figured out how to live this way, and which means it's possible. And if we, from a discipleship standpoint, if we could figure out together how to, because this is not natural. Like this is, like these things run against the grain of Rob.
Yeah.
You know, so if we could come together and figure out how to do this too, I think we could see God continue to do some amazing things within this town of Missoula.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to be trumpeting this for probably the rest of the Acts series because I just keep seeing it. The unity.
Yeah.
Like this is, they were of one accord. And all of these are exponentially easier in community.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if I'm struggling with being merciful.
Right.
But I'm in a community that's right. going to hold me accountable and keep pushing me towards that.
Yeah.
Like that makes it so much easier. Without the community, probably impossible for me to live all of these out. Because there will be some that I'm not going to be good at.
Yeah, and I find myself like, man, blessed are the peacemakers. Rob doesn't always want to be a peacemaker when driving down Reserve.
Ooh.
And I talk about this in my care group all the time because it's a reality, and I want that to be different. Like, I want to be a peacemaker always. But if we don't have that space where we could be vulnerable with people that actually love us and hold us to an accountability and pray for us and where we can confess, man, I did not handle this well.
Sure.
You know, or we process, you know, in these one-on-one conversations, there's a guy that he wants to be discipled. We're taking time together. He's asked for it. I'm like, absolutely. And we have these conversations and he'll say things and I'm like, have you considered this? He's like, oh man. Yeah.
Yep.
Same things that I had to consider.
Sure.
You know? And so, yeah,
everyone's got their blind spots.
Yep.
And the only way to cover those blind spots is to put other people around you that don't have those blind spots. I'm a firm believer in that.
Or they just see each other's blind spots and, you know, I see your blind spots, you see my blind spots, we both go, oh, we should probably do something about that in ourselves.
You got like a splinter in your eye there.
Yeah. Let me go distracted
by that log sticking out of your head.
Don't whack me with the log. Careful how you turn your head.
that is what it says. It's right. There's a the splinter versus a log. Can we just is it a log? Like, are we talking a log? Oh, that's a good Redwall. Go for anybody who's a Redwall fan. That's a log. Great reference. Anyway, Molly and Robert Lake, what are you talking about?
I know it's the warrior mice, right?
Yeah. I think it's the shrews.
The shrews?
I think the shrews were the log was their chieftain.
Anyway, I was totally lost.
Rob is lost.
It used to be on like PBS or something.
It did used to be. I used to skip church every once in a while to watch Redwall. Yeah.
My grandparents would record it and we'd go down and watch it.
Yeah, I would I would occasionally skip church to stay home and
heathen.
I thought that was much better than going to listen to some crackpot fool give a sermon at that point. But anyway, that got real, real fast.
I wonder who's gonna be skipping your sermon coming up.
He's gonna be Christian. They're gonna be Christian Bailing.
It'll be Christian
Bailing.
It's in 2 weeks.
Well, not this weekend, but the next weekend, the 15th or 16th or whatever. I don't know.
I'll be talking
Cornelius. That. I'm going to use the bump tune from the Newsboys. I think it's the Newsboys. Cornelius. Anyway. But like, is that an actual, like, how do you get a log in your eye? We got so off topic there.
Yeah.
That was entirely my fault. Oh. But
I think it's more the imagery of it.
Yeah, but like, can we just, for a moment, picture a log in somebody's eye?
Not something I really care to envision.
Molly doesn't like stab wounds, but okay, so if you're listening to this and you have artistic skills...
I don't wish to see this picture.
Molly doesn't want to see this, but I desperately want an artistic rendering of the, somebody with a stick versus somebody with a log.
It needs to be a Far Side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this just sounds like a Far Side comic or...
Yeah.
That's... If there has been one, if somebody's already done it, like, hit me with it. Yeah. I want to know.
info@missionridge.church
Yep. You don't get those ones, right, Molly? No, you don't get infos? Okay, good. I'll forward it to her. It'll be fine.
You're so great.
So the other reason why, and I forgot to mention, the other reason why I believe the first seven and then the last two are two lists with themselves, but then mirror each other in some way or speak to each other in some way is that verse 3 says, theirs is the kingdom of heaven, and verse 10 says, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And so Jesus is connecting these two lists, the first seven and the last two, and he's saying these are tied together. He's using verbal cues, I believe, to tie these together. And as the disciples spent time processing, thinking through, wrestling with what did he mean by that, I think the verbal cues would connect these two lists. So that's why I believe they're connected. Mm-hmm. But
that's a good point.
Tell us what your theories are. We'd love to hear about them. And what does this mean to you, and how are you living it out most of all? Hopefully in community.
I don't know. If you figured out how to not do it in community, let me know. Let me know. You just let me know.
Community is important.
Well, go be hermits.
Go be hermits. Hermits for Jesus.
Hermits in a cave. Perfect. All right. Well, thanks for joining us on another episode of Footnotes. It's been a good time. I hope you found this useful and not just a complete waste of your time. Who are we kidding? You loved it.
You loved it.
You know it. All right. But hit us up. Like we said, info@missionridge.church. Question, concerns, and comments can go to, I don't know, somebody. Just take your pick.
Let's go Brent.
Oh, Brent. Yeah. Brent@lifer.org. LiferOTP.com.
Yes.
Brent@LiferOTP.com. Go ahead and send him your questions, concerns, and comments.
Yes, especially complaints.
Complaints for sure. Make sure there's some typing or typos in there and possibly some digital glitter.
Yes.
Just saying.
Digital glitter is the best.
Yeah, I don't know. Something like, I'd figure that out. I don't even know if that's a thing, but if it's a thing, it should be a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love you, Brett.
I think he would prefer it digitally anyway.
Yeah. Probably. I don't know. Maybe. We're going to find out something terrible.
Spam folder.
It's like, Perfect. All right. Well, have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Peace.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up #blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.